Introduction. When I read the Gospels, I'm always amazed at the way Jesus of Nazareth gazes back at me from their pages. I so wish they had a video back then, or at least someone with a good audio recorder. There is not quite enough of the written words to satisfy my desire to know just what he was like, what he felt, and what he thought. I've laid out for you, the reader, a picture of Jesus of Nazareth that gives expression to what it was like to be him. I am sure I fall far short of the real Jesus of Nazareth, but none of us has enough information to do much better. However, my thinking through the implications of what he said, and from his conversations with others, we can build up a likely picture of what moved him so mightily in those encounters. I must own up to a lot of curious ideas. For example, I have never thought Jesus did sermon preparation. He got into discussions with people, listened to them, and then after a time of discussion, clinched what he was trying to get across with a parable. He never messed with people's heads, did not play games, never manipulated others, and was understood by farm laborers, fishermen, and lawyers. The only people who could not understand him were some of the clergy of the day. They could not argue with his parables because each one made self-evident points which no one could challenge. These men didn't want to see or hear what Jesus had to say. They had eyes but would not see, and ears to hear but did not want to understand. I imagine the conversations that went on between Jesus and those around him. I derive my sense of what went on from the text we have. Consistent with my drive to remain realistic, I leave out of the story religious and doctrinal intrusions from later periods. However, sometimes I had to choose between the accounts we have of the same stories. Jesus' baptism is an example. Was the Spirit that alighted on him God in the form of a dove? Matthew's Gospel. The Holy Spirit, Luke. Or just the Spirit, Mark and John. Was Jesus even baptized? John does not say so. But the Synoptic Gospels all copy their original source in this matter. I try to reflect in my story of this event the drama we find in John's Gospel. I believe the Gospel texts are very good. They are made up of written sources or documents that were eventually consolidated and additional material was included from the oral tradition that existed in the various communities throughout the Mediterranean basin. These communities were very different from each other, and so each emphasized different aspects of Jesus of Nazareth's ministry. I've tried my best to eliminate those special perspectives so that I can connect the dots and draw a consistent picture of a person. Now I found this difficult because not everything that was put in Jesus' mouth was consistent. I concluded that some things got put in Jesus' mouth years later to help the church teach the new converts coming into the church. Well, that is another book. I struggled to just pay attention to the words of the parable or teaching moment and set aside for another time the interpretive teaching that the disciples had to provide for all the new members who had never met Jesus. This works well for the three synoptic gospels, but not for the fourth. John's gospel, by contrast, puts into Jesus of Nazareth's mouth words which did not belong. Such teaching as, "He who has seen me has seen the Father," or, "I have come that you might have life and have it more abundantly," belong rather to the risen Christ, in whose presence the writer of John's gospel had spent 50 years. What he put in Jesus of Nazareth's mouth was the truth he had heard and lived with over those 50 years and had taught those who followed him. Now you can identify these passages because in the three other gospels, Jesus always uses simile to convey an illustration. For example, the kingdom of heaven is like a sower. John never uses simile, but expresses in metaphor Jesus' teaching about himself. "I am the vine, you are the branches," or "I am the good shepherd," are two examples of John's use of metaphor. The synoptic gospels are about the good news and the kingdom of God, but John's gospel is about Jesus and who he is. Jesus avoids talking directly about himself in the synoptic gospels, and he's careful to make no claims that he is the Messiah till he reveals it to his disciples. To make the story work, I had to be inventive. But as far as I could, I stayed within historical bounds. I introduced Annas, father-in-law to Caiaphas the high priest. Now, he had been fired in 15 CE by Valerius Gatus, Pilate's predecessor, but continued to control the politics of the temple. Now that is history and can be found in the writings of Josephus, a contemporary Jewish historian. In my book, Annas plotted the death of Jesus. Now this is somewhat supported by the text, but for the sake of the story, I had to create in Annas a counterbalance to Jesus. Thus, this I did by inventing a very convenient diary in which Annas wrote all his thoughts. That is all fiction. Recently, there has been an effort to rewrite history and steer the blame for Jesus' death away from the Jewish people and onto Pilate. The Jewish people who welcomed Jesus a week before and the rest of the citizens of Jerusalem did not fill the courtyard before Pilate, nor did they demand Jesus' death. The trial before Pilate happened early in the morning. Word had not got out, and people were only beginning to wake up to what was happening. Now, Jesus was on the cross by noon. A lot had to happen before the trial and execution. Those who planned, carried out the arrest, handed him over to Caesar and filled that courtyard with the clergy of the temple and their retainers. In every religion, it is the clergy who point the finger and light the fires under the martyrs, then wring their hands in lament that such things are necessary. It is Christian clergy who have for 2,000 years got their people to cry, "Crucify him," at every Palm Sunday's reading of the Passion, and stirred up persecution and pogroms of innocent Jewish citizens. So no, it was not the Jewish people, but a very special group of temple clergy of the Sadducees to whom John refers in his gospel. Members of the Essene community figure peripherally in the story. There is no evidence Jesus ever went to Qumran or even associated with them in any way. However, there are a lot of ideas and vocabulary Jesus shared with the Essenes, and therefore I introduce them as a factor in the early stages of Jesus' ministry. Their expectations of the Messiah did not coincide with Jesus' view of his role at all. I therefore draw a distinction between their expectations and the mission statement he develops for himself. Sorting out what we know of Jesus of Nazareth and defining his teaching is like putting together a jigsaw puzzle from a box that's missing 20% of its pieces, and has pieces from other puzzles tossed in too. Theologians have done a good job of sorting the pieces into piles, but putting the puzzle together is problematic. There's just not enough information to satisfy modern requirements of proof beyond a shadow of doubt. Therefore, we have to pose questions, speculate about possible answers, and test how well those answers fit into the whole. This process demands scrutiny of the text, imagination, raising of alternative possibilities, and an open mind. Here are a few questions I wrestled with as I wrote the story. What was Jesus' mission statement? I chose to see Jesus' mission statement as his intent to destroy not the physical temple building, but the temple system of sacrifice, the priesthood it supported, and the notional beliefs that maintained people's superstitions. There was no way the changes that Jesus ushered in could ever be grafted onto the old sacrificial system. Jesus had to define the Messiah. But was the Messiah to be a Davidic king in the here and now, or Son of Man, a heavenly Messiah that was far more? What was the nature of God? This one piece of information Jesus was intent on getting out there. His understanding on this subject was bound to conflict with the superstition and theology followed by the contemporary system. If the sacrificial system of the temple was to be overthrown, with what did Jesus intend to replace it? Jesus developed a cohesive view of the kingdom of heaven and offered it to his people as an alternative to the traditional Jewish sacrificial practices. Now, what were the dates of Jesus' ministry? That is, how long did he lead a public life? We have conflicting information. Gospel stories, Luke and John, describe Jesus' ministry as beginning as early as 26 Common Era and lasting as long as 7 years until Jesus' death in 32 or 33. At least half of this time he spends in the Jerusalem area. However, other Gospels, Matthew and Mark, tell of his ministry as lasting only a year, and with him confined to Galilee, except for that last week of his life, which he spent in Jerusalem. I join these two traditions, accepting both as part of the story. Then, why should John, the beloved disciple, be reporting the dialogue? John's gospel, despite its editorial material, contains several very convincing eyewitness accounts. Its author is traditionally thought to be the beloved disciple and the person closest to Jesus during the story's time frame. The authorship of John's gospel is as complicated as any of the other gospels. I prefer at this stage to adopt John, a young man from Jerusalem, as the beloved disciple who kept Jesus company through the years of his ministry. He is, by tradition, the oldest surviving disciple by the 80s or 90s, and had spent those 50 years in the presence of the risen Christ, drawing ever closer in that relationship. And this may be why he is thought of as the beloved disciple, rather than having a special relationship with Jesus of Nazareth that is not referred to anywhere but in one verse of John's Gospel. So what is the nature of evil? Evil figures prominently throughout the Gospels, but how can we relate to it today? Is there an evil one? At one level, Jesus fights ignorance and superstition, but at another level, he struggles with an ancient enemy that eludes modern definition. Then who wanted Jesus dead so badly they were prepared to have him crucified? This was not about healing on the Sabbath or not adhering to the Pharisees' exacting standards. There was far more at stake for those in power of Jesus' proposed way. It was followed to its ultimate conclusion. I make the case for the Sadducees being responsible for his death. And finally, how Jewish was Jesus? Did he keep kosher? We must remember Jesus was Jewish, thought as a Jew, and saw the world through Jewish eyes. His view of the coming kingdom was within the bounds of Jewish thought, for Daniel and others had given voice to the idea of the Messiah. None of what Jesus taught can be forced from the Hebrew scriptures. Occasionally, my descriptions of healings and the encounters people had with Jesus are taken from my own experiences. The words I quote and the actions I describe are sometimes those of people I have been privileged to work with during my ministry. But I wrote these books, part one, part two, for all those who demanded of me believable answers to their thoughtful and intelligent questions. With or without me, these people so often found themselves in the presence of the risen Christ, and subsequently had even more questions about Jesus of Nazareth. He was and is to them the man Jesus, before the transformation wrought by the resurrection. Our subsequent myths have bred confusion, making Jesus of Nazareth remote and incomprehensible, and the risen Christ an unrelated magical figure. End.
Very powerful. Good job.
What does that sound like?
Sounds good. Sounds great. I'll send you a link. We'll get it up on your website. I think it's good that you read it. I'm going to stop recording now.